in 5, 4, 3.
This is episode 27 of the podcast without a name.
Right, you heard it correctly. The podcast without a nose. Without a name, episode 27.
I put my best
after almost 2 months.
My best advertising voice on there.
That was good. I liked it. But we're back without Anthony. He's doing something with power lines. Not quite sure. He said something about sitting in a power station. Not sure what's going on there.
We're all enjoying having fun times. Home, snuggled in with our loved ones, and Anthony's out there busting his hump.
Well, just everyone can sleep well knowing Anthony's in charge of the power grid.
So if you lose your power tomorrow, we'll give you his phone number. It's 2-1.
Anyway, we're happy to be back. We had a little bit of a hiatus, not much, just about maybe a month and a half, almost 2 months. A lot going on in our personal lives, a lot going on weather, which kind of kept Anthony out. We're going ahead tonight without him, unfortunately, but we'll get him on the next podcast. He could catch up. There's a lot of things that have gone on since our last podcast. So we're going to cover down on what we can of that. We're going to hit on the gun control debate after a couple school shootings recently of note, the one in Florida. I believe it was 17 kids and a couple teachers were killed, murdered. There's some package bombings going on in Austin, Texas that we'll talk about real quickly, and we'll cover down on some diplomacy in North Korea, which probably didn't get as much news coverage than it should have. But you know, super interesting stuff. There's probably a ton of other really cool things we could talk about that we missed, but unfortunately we're gonna try to keep this to a 45-minute podcast.
Thanks, Melissa.
So, Rich, how are you doing? What are you drinking? Anything going on?
Nothing really going on, no. I'm drinking some Hams. It's about $15 for a 30-pack, so it's a pretty classy beer. It has a pretty racist commercial from back in the 50s, if you listen to it. It's very much appropriating of Native American culture, but hey, we're going to let that slide because they're probably under new ownership. It's probably like the Russians brewing this stuff.
Oh, sure. Or InBev.
Yeah, somebody. It's definitely not the same people from the 50s.
So I have two beers on tap tonight. Well, not on tap, but in bottles tonight. I'm drinking a Sam Adams Boston Lager to get me started. And then I'm going to move on to my house beer, which is the Stella Artois, the Belgium beer. It's kind of a staple in our fridge right now because my wife likes it too. So we get it all the time.
Well, you know what? I do have to include. Yeah. I'm not total white trash. When I got my my wife some drinks for the impending snowstorm tonight, I picked up a bottle of one of those large bottles with the cork in it. Was that like a quart?
Oh, yeah.
I got the Chimay White Ale, which was pretty nice.
That sounds pretty
drank
good.
That with dinner. Yeah. So that was a good time. Nice.
What did you pair it with at dinner?
It was actually biscuits, homemade biscuits and sausage gravy.
That sounds pretty good.
Scrapple, eggs.
So you did breakfast for dinner kind of thing?
We definitely did, yeah. We do that a lot.
We do that every once in a while. It's pretty cool. So enough about us. What's going on in the world? Let's talk gun control, man. Do you want to highlight real quick the couple events that happened over the past month?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think you're the headline guy. You have such a newscaster voice. I can't get over it.
Is this a moment for, hold on. Where is it?
Oh, I know it's coming.
Hold on. Where is it? Oh, no, not that one. That was the gobble. Wrong one. We're going to do.
That was entirely inappropriate.
This is CNN breaking news.
This just into the news desk. We are going to talk about something that's probably talked about too much. Gun control.
But we're going to give you our scorching hot takes.
Yeah, yeah, we're gonna touch on this very broadly. We discussed this before the episode. We, you know, this is a very complex issue, despite what you'll read in Huffington Post and Fox News. There's a lot more complexity to this than that's on the surface, right? You know, we're talking about the Constitution here. So we're gonna talk about this in a little bit of a broad aspect to kind of summarize some of the perspectives here, some of the things we've heard over the last month. It's a very hot button topic. I mean, people are like pretty heated over this. So, where do you want to start here? I mean, obviously there was the Florida shooting. What was it? The Parkland, Florida, or something Parkland, like that. Yeah. 17 kids were killed, and some teachers. There's a ton of things that went wrong in that situation that need to be addressed, and we'll talk about that. And then I think just today, as of this recording, there was almost a mass shooting in a Maryland high school that was thwarted by a armed school resource officer, which the one today was quite opposite of the one earlier in Florida. And the one in Maryland worked almost the way it should have worked in that situation, with the resource officer stopping it. The one in Florida, the resource officers didn't actually engage the shooter. And it actually may have ended up in a lot more people's lives being lost than needed to be. Now, a lot of that is still up to an investigation. So, and, you know, we don't want to be that Monday morning quarterback type of approach where, you know, what would we do in that situation? We don't know. We don't know all the facts, but there seems to have been a bunch of different failures in the Florida situation, and the Maryland ones seem to have worked correctly to a certain degree. We don't know all the facts in that either. So there could have been failures too. How did he was there after all with a gun. So something happened, right? Yeah, I don't think anyone died in the one today. I think there's a couple injuries. I think the actual perpetrator was killed by the resource officer. But gun control, man. So I think the major things you'll hear on the news is all these kids coming out in Florida, pretty much being directed by adults. So there's a little bit of uncertainty about the real grassroots of all this. But nevertheless, they're giving a lot of airtime to them, and they have very strong opinions. They try to wrap it in this bipartisan approach and very emotional approach, but it really is a very partisan issue. So, you know, you got the kids yelling. Everyone seems to think we need to be making our policy based on what the kids are saying. And I don't think there's anything wrong with listening to them. It's a way for them to grieve. And in many ways, what you see in the media is just a collective grieving, right? And so we all have to understand that no matter what we see when we're talking on Facebook, that we're all grieving in some way, shape, or form. We saw this after 9/11. We saw this after all these major events. We do it as a society. So we can't really just sit there and just get mad at people over this stuff. Let the process move on. I think cooler heads will prevail, and maybe we'll get somewhere sensibly with this. I don't know for sure. But so, you know, Rich, what is your kind of take on over this last month of this gun control debate that really what really stands out to you in the arguments that you're hearing, and what ones really seem more legit to you, or what ones really just kind of are outrageous?
Well, I mean, as always, I think the first thing you have to do is kind of discount anybody that says, you know, if you don't want X, Y, and Z to happen, you want kids to die. Or like, if you don't, you know, if you want to talk about gun control, you know, you're a communist or the government's trying to disarm you and things like that. So I think if you eliminate that, there's some decent meat on the sandwich in you know, reasonable people. So, you know, Donald Trump has come out and said he wanted to raise the age of buying assault weapons to 21 years old. A lot of chains, you know, like sporting good chains did raise the limit to 21. That caused a little bit of an uproar. So, I mean, there's things that are happening already. You know, certainly there's a lot to be talked about, but I think you certainly can have a gun control debate. You can talk about, you know, what the Second Amendment of the Constitution was created for, whether or not people, you know, deserve to have certain guns, what the age limit for those guns should be, whether or not people should be able to use bump stocks, whatever the case may be. That's a lot of, you know, technical things that we could get into. I think, you know, gun control is a fine thing, but when you look at the concentration of mass shootings, and I think if you go back to like 1999, it's like before that, they were really, really rare. And then after Columbine, you start seeing them fairly regularly. And that's what's the disconcerting part to me is. It's like you can ban a gun, you can you can try to control what arms people have, but what's the reason behind young men, mostly white men, I'm not going to lie. I mean, the people that are people of color have committed mass shootings. One of the deadliest ones, you know, Virginia Tech was, you know, a person that was not white. So there's been cases of not white. But what is causing young men? I would say that's a common thread among all of them. What's causing young men to snap like that and want to do that kind of damage to people that they know or were supposed to know? You know, it's like they're going and shooting a bunch of stranger. In the majority of these cases, they're going to a place that they, you know, had gone to before, their school, you know, their place of work, something like that. So what is causing this? So I had a little bit of a theory, and I'm going to try to keep this buttoned up. And of course, I'm going to let you respond, Joe. But I had kind of a theory, and, you know, people were saying, oh, it's violent video games or it's bullying on the internet. And I think like video games in the internet certainly do play a part, but not in the part that people think that they're playing. I think video games in the internet don't show us more violent examples or anything, you know, like that. You know, I think there's already been studies where people show that violent video games don't necessitate violent behavior. But what I think is happening is that people are spending more time playing video games on the internet, in their phones, that they sort of lose their sense of community. You know, they don't interact with people on a real level. It's all artificial, or at least the majority is artificial. So like, it's like they're in a hurry to get out of the real world to get back to their artificial world. So like, you know, I think we all know that, you know, we grew up on streets where we talked to our neighbors, we knew everybody's name. And now probably where we're at, we may know a couple neighbors. So people, I think, are losing their sense of community, which is making them lose their sense of, you know, humanity. And when they're looking at another person and seeing them as a person and not like an avatar in the artificial world. So that's kind of buttoned up, you know, my theory. But hopefully I didn't take up too much time.
That's good. I have some thoughts on your theory, so I'll add it in there. So you're not completely wrong to say that before, what was it,
1999
about. So I would say you're probably right in the spirit of what you're saying. Just switch it over about 10 years. So NPR put a piece out. It was pretty good in some research that talks about that overall school shootings are actually down since the mid 1990s. So yeah, I think you're right. You just got to scoot it to the left a little bit. There was somewhat of a surge in school shootings in the mid 90s. And they do some comparisons, you know, the rates of school shootings and school deaths per, you know, 1 million students or something like that. And the trend has been on a downward end since, I think, I want to say 2000 something. Early 2000s. So, and in theory right now, according to the math, schools are technically safer than they've been in decades, according to, I believe it was Harvard dude, whatever his name is. No, professor of criminology at Northeastern University. And he was studying the phenomenon of mass murders and in particular schools since the 1980s. And so I don't think you're wrong, but I think the time frames just scoot it to the left. And we're just like many things you see in the media about like violence, right? Like you would think the way the media covers these things that we're at like some sort of all time high. It's not, the perception isn't always the reality in this type of thing. The media always is going to have a bias towards just the most dramatic or most sensational thing that happens. And there's not many things that kind of top the people who goes into a school and, you know, kill a bunch of kids, right? Like that's always going to get a ton of airplay no matter what. And anything that has to deal with murder and death and destruction is always going to be get disproportionate media coverage. So I think we get this perception in social media and with our mainstream media nowadays for clicks that some things are just really bad. Like overall violence in our country is at an all-time low. Overall gun violence in our country is at an all-time low. There's a lot of things that are all-time lows that you would never think that because of how it's covered in your newsfeed on Facebook and in the media. That being said, just as a quick note that this researcher does point out that mass shootings are technically up overall, but not in particular to schools. So he does make that distinction. So yeah, I think you're right. The sense of community thing, that makes sense in many different social psychological realms. Community is a big thing. That's why religion and sports, are kind of, I feel like, are important parts of our social fabric. Even though I'm not a religious person, I'm obviously a big sports fan. But I do think that those things help build communities. And for the most part, religion has done, you know, a net positive for our society than a net negative. And same thing with like things like sporting events and other ways that we build communities. So yeah, I completely agree with that. We've seen a breakdown of our general communities over the last, you know, 10, 20, 30 years. And an interesting kind of tidbit on that is the research in suicides hits on this situation. You see different, if you base suicides out by race, you see white males are on this like crazy incline of suicides. But you look at different races and you don't see that replicated. So there's something in different cultures or different races that have different communities that can be said about the community building. So for example, let's take black men or black people overall versus white people and suicides. You don't see that same spike in suicides over the last 10, 20 years like you see in those groups. But if you look for how they build their communities and they create a cohesive group, you'll see that people, black people or other ethnic groups tend to have more of a sense of community than white people right now. Right. So that kind of speaks to that idea of when you belong to a community, you feel like you're embraced by a community, you have a support structure or whatever it might be, you're probably going to be overall just better mental health. Right. So I think that's true too. I'm not sure how much like say video games in particular and screen time really plays into that. There's a lot of research out there that has kind of disproved that. There's some research that's vague on that. I think it does get more to your ultimate point of the community and how that takes you out of your community, right? Because you're occupied by that. So I kind of get that aspect. I agree with you on that. So,
but I mean, wouldn't you say then too, like, let's just say for instance, like, it's a fact, in America, there's a concentration of poor black people, right? I mean, like, disproportionately a large amount of black people are poorest compared to the amount of poor white people, you know, to how many white people there are. Right. So
socioeconomic status.
Right. Yeah. So I think when you're in, if you go through neighborhoods that are predominantly black, a lot of times they're poor neighborhoods. That's where you see people outside interacting with each other. Maybe it has to do with there being a more urban environment that maybe they live in cities. But I think a lot of times you see like they'll be out playing basketball. They'll be out hanging on their steps.
There's more of a sense of community.
They'll be out going to church together on Sundays. Like like everybody's in each other's business. Like, oh, so-and-so's mom said this about so-and-so. Like they all know. Like I feel like that's like there's a real sense of community there. Like I don't think you get that when you're like upper middle class or middle class. It's like people kind of live in their single home or, you know, and they're like, this is my little area, you know, whatever.
I 100% agree. Like, so I think the community thing is really important in this, right?
And I hope I didn't sound racist saying any of that. That wasn't my intention. If I said anything that sounded racist, because I always get nervous talking about stuff like that because I don't want to say like they, them, and come off as like, you know.
And you could probably take what you just said in that model and even expand upon it to keep it in a socioeconomic realm, because you might go to like a poor white neighborhood and see something similar, right? It just so happens that in our country, the poor neighborhoods are disproportionately on the black side, right? So there's also poor white neighborhoods, a similar setup that you just described, right? So I mean, you could kind of peg it to the socioeconomic status and the community that is developed around that in inner cities. And you're right, there's a certain level of mental health that comes out of that, right? I can't emphasize enough how important these different institutions in our society are to build this moral and fabric, right? Whether it's religions or some other community groups or, you know, these things are important, right? Like we just had, you know, the Eagles just won the Super Bowl. Look at how the city came together, relatively peaceful gatherings of people in the millions. And it was just people dancing. They didn't care what color. No one cared what color they were. Like you were high-fiving with anyone. No one thought about that stuff. It was about the team, yeah. The game, the sport. These things build like bridges. These, whether it's religion, sport, keep naming it, right? Just random groups, like, on, you know, whatever community group down the street, you know, you play pinochle, right? Those type of groups, right? Like, these things are very important. And as you see people kind of get away from that, whether it be on socioeconomic status or race, moving into suburbia and, you know, living on a couple acres of land and not having neighbors for far away, right? Or, you know, you just kind of see it over and over again that as we trend in these directions, you know, we're starting to see a little bit more extreme mental health issues. And it's just, you know, it's a social fabric and safety net that might not be there anymore, right?
Well, that's what I was saying. Yeah, like, you know, people discount that. And it's like I said, you can enact any sort of gun control that you want, but you're not eliminating the cause of the disturbed individuals that are doing it, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, this is it's a touchy subject, right? So it is a mental health thing, right? But it's like, how do you address the mental health thing, right? Because you can't just sit here and go, fine, if you're mental, then you can't buy a gun. Because now that's very subjective. How do you label someone mental, right? You get back to this idea where you can't take, like, this you hear all the time with the gun debate where they say, oh, if you're on a no-fly list, you shouldn't be able to buy a gun. And on the surface, yeah, right, damn right, that makes sense, right? If you're on a no-fly list, why are you allowed to buy a gun? You can kill people, you're a terrorist, right? The problem is you can't create a list to take constitutional rights away, right? There's no due process in that list. If there's due process, sure, take them away. But you need the due process. You don't want lists taking away rights, whether it's your First Amendment rights, Second Amendment, whatever amendment right. You do not want a list governing what constitutional rights you can and cannot have. That is like the shit that Nazis are made of, right? Like,
but what about a person that their wife files a PFA against them and maybe he really didn't do anything? But the police come and take their guns because it's a risk. You know, this woman feels endangered by this person, so we're going to take their guns until whatever happens. You know, they go to court.
So at some point that would have to be adjudicated, right? There would have to be, he, you know, in those cases, he has the ability to probably appeal. Like, I have never been involved with a restraining order type of thing. So I'm assuming there is some recourse that the man could take. But you're right. This is what makes this a complex issue, right? That's exactly right, because there's so many subjective things that could go into what makes someone not mentally stable to own a gun, right? So that's extremely complex. We're not going to have the answer here for that, right? But it's just something we need to understand, that we're not talking about like your privilege of being able to drive a car, right? We're not talking about that. That's not in the Constitution. We're talking about a constitutional right. And as long as it's in the Constitution, that's what we're dealing with. So we have to accept that fact, right? There was no constitutional convention. We didn't have a two-thirds, ratification of a new amendment to the Constitution to, you know, supersede the Second Amendment. That hasn't happened yet. So until that happens, unless you're working towards that in some way, shape, or form, until that happens, you have to accept the fact that without due process, you cannot take someone's constitutional rights away. That is, the Supreme Court has upheld that. There's just, you just can't, right? You need some level of due process. Now, there is due process for mental ill cases, right? You can go to a judge and have people's rights taken away based on mental ill issues, right? But you have to go to a judge. You have to go through due process. And that's just hard to do, almost to the scale that you need to do it for this situation, it seems like.
And, right? And I think that's already law in most places. Like, I know in Pennsylvania, if you've ever been committed to a mental institution, or even if I think you committed yourself, you can't own a firearm. So, you know, that's already on the books in a lot of places. I think what people are confusing is so-and-so showed a lot of red flags. Well, red flags don't have medical documentation, you know?
Red flags don't constitute due process. Yeah,
just because somebody's stabbing puppies, you know, well, hey, maybe you should report them for it's stabbing horrible, puppies, yeah. You know? That's, I think, where people are getting confused. They're thinking like, oh, well.
And this brings us to the Florida shooting, right? So look at how many things broke down in that situation. It's hard to say we want more of that stuff because it didn't work, right? The FBI was notified about it. The police Went to the dude's house like 20 something times. We learned, I think, yesterday that apparently it was recommended that he be committed. Like, from apparently the deputies had recommended. I'm not sure through what process, but apparently it was recommended. So you had the FBI breakdown, the local police breakdown, and it still happened months, if not years before it happened. Right. I mean, and can we do something now that can change that? No, because what that really, you know, what that really fell on is the humans involved with that had to follow up. And no one followed up with it. So it was almost human error. Like, the system and process were in place, but no one went through with it. It's such, the Florida shooting is such a, like, a really good, like, case study on, like, when government fails and then potentially what we could do better in some cases. Right.
Yeah. And I mean, look at that. It's just like, it's like work ethic too. You know, like, how many people do you know that go into work every day and like, I'm going to crush it? Like, not many people. Most people are like, I'm going to do what I have to do to get by so I don't get fired. So it's like, you know, how do you really hold those people to a higher standard? You know, if they're doing the bare minimum, it's like, well, maybe they were following policy. Maybe it's like, well, you know, if something happens this many times within this many months, maybe there's some kind of parameters they have to follow where it's like, they were like, oh, it's on the edge. I'll let it slide. I don't feel like doing the paperwork sort of a thing, you know?
Yeah. But that's the thing. It's like those things probably happen millions of times a day. And out of all those times that people, like, you know, either don't take pride in their work or don't, or they're just cutting corners, or, you know, like, all it takes is that one instance, right?
Yeah.
Like, it just takes one time and, like, it's like, great. Now, like, everything's fucked. Right. It's like, so, you know, it's so complex, man. Like, this, I hate how we trivialize it and, like, the media and, like, stuff. And it's just, there's so much to this, especially because we're talking about the Constitution. It's just, it's frustrating, well, in many ways, but
yeah. And it's like the one weird thing, like, and I kind of just thought of this, that, like, we're talking about gun control and I'm thinking, like, you know, in my work, the, where we're at is like a very democratic place. It's based on this business model called Holacracy. So, like, there's meetings and people have titles and there's, like, there's no, like, leadership, you know, like, there's no, like, managers or supervisors. So, like, everybody's, like, pretty much on an even keel. It's just like, so, like, we'll have meetings about stuff and we'll say, like, you know, we'll adopting this certain policy. Like, will that cause harm or move the organization backwards? It's like, you have to vote yes or no. And then it's like, all right.
It's like the parliamentary system.
Is it safe enough to try? It's like, you have to say yes or no. So it's like, I could see this. Like, I kind of, like, look at the gun debate and it's like, maybe there just has to be certain things added just to put accountabilities on people to make sure that they do their job. Like, hey, if you don't do this and X happens, you know, you're going to be held accountable. Like, this could be a charge filed against you. Not like you're going to get fired from your job. You know, that would be maybe something that I would, in the light of the Florida thing, I mean, specific to the Florida thing, if you add some more accountability to that position, maybe that mistake doesn't happen. You know?
Yeah, I agree. And that's a sensible way of going about it. You know, what's kind of annoying in all this, in this whole debate, is, like, it seems like at the wake of these things, it's either you come out on one, God bless you. It's either you come out on one end or the other. And they're, like, kind of extreme, like, take the guns away or guns kill. You must hate kids. Or the other one is, like you said in the beginning of all this, you're a commie, the government, I need to protect myself from the government. Right. Well, I think, like we say many times, let's multitask here. I think, listen, if you really care about children not getting shot in schools, then you have to 100% at this moment in time, in the short term, agree with putting in extra security measures in school. Because no matter what you do on the other side of this, when it comes to the gun control aspect of it, there's still going to be guns accessible for a certain period of time. Even if you decide right now that all guns need to be confiscated and the government's going to go out and confiscate, there still is a period of time for which guns will be available, because the government's not going to get to all those guns. They're not going to be confiscated enough time where people could die in interim, right? So the only way of preventing that is with a good defense, right? So if you're serious, you need to accept and move forward with legitimate and reasonable safety mechanisms to be put into schools right now, whether that's arming teachers that want to be armed, whether that's metal detectors, more school resource officers, right? Like, you have to, if you really want kids to not die in this type of situation, you 100% have to agree with that in the short term, at least, at minimum.
And Joe, to speak to something you said earlier, and I was actually holding on to this one for forever, and I forgot about it. Because of how eloquent you are, and you're just very well spoken. You had brought up something. About how statistics show that, you know, since the mid 90s, school shootings have been down, and now schools are safer than they've ever been. And I don't disagree with you on that. However, wouldn't you say that after like the first or second mass shooting, schools started implementing these changes? I mean, when we went to Ryan, all you needed was a little card to scan in. Now, like, they have to have clear bags. They have to, like, there's so much more security in schools now.
There is more, yes. And I agree. Before. And I would say that the reason why we see them as safe as they are today is maybe because of reactions to what happened in the 90s, right? So that's just kind of evidence to say that when these things happened, there is value in thinking about it and taking reasonable steps, right?
Yeah, and what you said is true then, because they did enact more security measures. I would say the majority of schools, if not all the schools in America, are probably way more scrupulous over who's coming and going in the school, you know?
The interesting thing is, like, for example, my son's school, when I go to pick them up, they have this camera at the door. You buzz it, and you have to show your ID to the camera, and then they let you in. And now, granted, that probably would have worked in the Florida shooting, because that kid was no longer a student there, so they would have been like, "You can't come in." So that first off should have been in place, right?
I think he was banned from the grounds, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, so there was a breakdown there. So the Florida shooting just
on all levels. Not even worth
it. Yeah, it's like, yeah, you need to talk about it because it was a tragedy, but you can't talk about it because it was such an outlier with how many things broke down in that situation. But my point is, there's so much emphasis on keeping outsiders out, but it's the insiders that are doing it. Like, so notwithstanding the Florida situation because he was banned, but these other school shootings were from students that were currently enrolled. Like, they had a reason to be there, right? Like, if they rolled up to the school and they had an ID to get in, they would get in, right? So this emphasis on keeping outsiders out, like, I don't know the statistics on people who have no connection to the school in some way, shape, or form, or who aren't students currently, what the statistics are for how many of them have committed these murders. But I can tell you all the major ones have been culprits were legitimate students.
The only one that I can remember that wasn't a student of the school was that dude that shot up that Amish schoolhouse.
Yeah.
Like, he was just some crazy guy who killed a bunch of Amish people. But I think everybody else, I think you're right, pretty much was a student of the school. I can't really think of one where their person wasn't affiliated with the school.
So the emphasis needs to move a little bit, right? They need to continue to do that, because if they would have had outsider protections at the Florida school, then this guy shouldn't have got in, right? Second, now I think we need to make sure we're being more critical of the actual students themselves. And it's like, when I hear that people say we need to arm teachers, right? That doesn't sound good to me either, right? On the surface, it doesn't, like, there's a part of me that I don't know how to explain it, that just goes, that's just, why would we put guns with teachers, right? Like, that just sounds horrible. But I think the reality of the situation is, if you want to stop these things now, you have to consider it. You really do have to consider it at minimum in the short. I can't emphasize this. This is at minimum in the short term, right? You have to say, we want this to stop. Here's what we could do in the short term. Let's do this. But simultaneously, we need to have the policy discussion to have a more long-term solution that doesn't involve having guns in desks in classrooms, right? And I think that's legitimate. Like, I hate how it's like, no guns at all. You hate kids, or you're trying to take my guns away, you're a commie. That's like, I hate it. There is a middle ground here. You can protect the schools while pursuing reasonable gun policy.
Well, here's my thing though, Joe, like, right. You can do this, but where does it end? Like, how much do you scrutinize every single student coming in and out of the door? Wouldn't it just be easier then to just say, all right, everybody's homeschooled, we'll have these hubs. where, you know, we'll put out content. You know, you can sign up for a school, but everything will be remote. It'll be from home.
Well, that might just be the future.
And we'll have clubs and sporting yeah. things and everything you can do. But the actual learning is all done via, like, laptop.
I completely think that's awesome. That's innovative. I think it's something that, if politically feasible, we should try. I think there's too much of a stronghold on education spending in our country to allow that to happen. But you're right. I think that'd be pretty damn cool to try. But listen, man, this is a cool debate, and I think we'll talk about it more. And maybe what we could do is in another podcast, maybe when we have Anthony on, present a little bit more of our individual positions, whatever it may be. But we're on 35 minutes or so, but so let's keep this moving on here. Keep things going. Yeah, we'll talk about the Austin package bombings that crept up over, I think it's the last 2 weeks now. I think we're on 6 bombings, and there was, before we came on air tonight, there was potentially another one. It was breaking news from the Associated Press. I think we have 2 people dead from it and 3 or 4 other people injured. The most recent, so the way they've been going is people have been coming out of their doors and there's packages and they open them up and there's bombs in them. Sounds very familiar. The most notable thing about one today was that one blew up in a FedEx facility. So this is a change from the previous 2 or 3 where they were being physically delivered by probably the perpetrator or accomplices at being put on people's doorsteps. Now they're trying to send it through FedEx. I'm drinking a lot of beer. One actually exploded in a FedEx facility. The other one was discovered, and I think self-detonate or purposefully controlled detonation conducted by FBI. And then before we came on, the Austin police were responding to another explosion where someone was injured. I haven't gotten the latest on that right now. But what we see here is what appears to be a copycat Unabomber. And I was just noting with Rich off air before we came on that it seems to be somewhat of a coincidence that my wife pointed out to me earlier today that this past August, Netflix released a miniseries on the Unabomber, which was really well produced and a really good miniseries, by the way. I watched it and I can't help but connect the two and think maybe we got a copycat here. Someone that's looking for that type of fame. Or someone that's like, I could outdo that. Maybe, you know, there's a million ways this could go. There's not a ton of information being released about these bombs right now, other than you just don't look at a package or don't open up a package that you weren't expecting, right? I don't know when we'll get this out. Hopefully we'll get this out in a couple of days. But if you're listening to this, although it's happening in Austin, please be careful, because the thing is with mail bombs, they could technically go anywhere. And at any moment, clearly this guy, so the ones in the FedEx facilities were addressed to Austin addresses. So whoever this is has some sort of fixation on that city, but they could flip a switch and start sending boxes other places. So just be on top of what you're expecting. I don't want you to call 911 every time you get a package that you can't readily identify, but just be careful, check your Amazon app orders and stuff like that in case you have Subscribe and Save or something that's coming that you might not be expecting before you open up a package that you're not expecting. This is pretty alarming. I mean, Rich, what do you think about this? Like, do you think that the glorification of the Unabomber?
Unabomber.
The Unabomber.
Hey, from Brooklyn.
It almost is a Boston kind of sound thing.
I'm
right?
Joe. I'm over here now.
Let me get my car. So do you think there's some sort of something going on here with this glorification of the Unabomber? And, the copycat thing has been done in the past, you know?
It
just seems creepy to me, you know?
No, I mean, it's really similar for sure. What the motives are, who knows? Certainly can't help that they're glorifying Ted Kaczynski in a documentary, but you know, sick people are sick people. You know, he probably was going to do something to somebody anyway. So I really don't know. I really don't know what you can say about that. I mean, I know certain serial killers have said like, oh, I want to beat so-and-so's record or things like that. But I would say until we find out more, I would kind of hold judgment on that.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what the ground truth is on the situation. You're absolutely right about this idea of like whether copycat or just trying to like they're going to find their way of doing what they want to do because they're sick to begin with.
Yeah, I mean,
whether it's because Unabomber inspired them or not, they're going to find another inspiration and you're going to do it that way, right?
Yeah, you're not going to send bombs to people in the mail unless there's something wrong with you, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, in many ways, that's the truth about mass murderers, right? I mean, if you're predisposed to murdering people, you're going to find your avenue or outlet to do that, right? I mean, unless it's a crime of passion, right? I mean, you're going to find your avenue, you're going to find your reason, you're going to find your motivation in something somewhere, right? And that's why it's hard to blame. That's why it's really almost dumb to blame, like, people that aren't directly involved in something, right? It's dumb to say if you support the NRA that you want kids killed, right? It's dumb to say that if you support Bernie Sanders, you want congressmen shot at baseball fields, right? Like, it's dumb to say that because these individuals who are doing these things are crazy. They're lunatics. They're not in the right mind. If it wasn't those causes or those targets in their view, they're going to find another one. And it's really wrong to kind of make those assumptions, make those accusations. And it's intellectually lazy, right? Yeah, you're right. There's not a ton to talk about with this, so we'll move on from this actually, since we're already hitting 40 something minutes here.
Yeah, I just don't know what you can really say about that. I mean, he's just a sick fucker, you know, sending bombs to people in the mail. Like, they don't seem to be connected in any way. It seems to be totally random. I mean, from what
at first they thought, you know, at first they thought there was a race thing because the first two victims were black. And I think that's since been discounted because they've moved on to other victims that are not black.
And the one was just like laying in a road. Anybody could have got hit by it. Like it was a tripwire bomb. So, you know, he just really seemed to want to blow people up, you know, whatever his reason, who knows, you know? I always like to say that quote from, I think it's Silence of the Lambs or maybe Red Dragon, one of them, he's like, maybe his mother hugged him too much. Or no, wait, what did he say? Maybe his mother didn't hug him enough, or maybe she hugged him too much. Or he says something about like why the guy's fucked up. And I thought that was pretty funny. It's like, wow, I can hug him too many times now? Shit. My kids are fucked.
It's no winning. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, we'll move on to the next topic, diplomacy going on in North Korea. What we're saying right now, it's not getting a ton of airplay, and maybe that's just because it's not a very sensational thing. But diplomacy is in full effect with North Korea. This is the right route to go. It makes sense. I think about 2 weeks ago now, I don't know who, a North Korean delegate, not North Korean, a South Korean delegation to the White House convinced Trump to meet with Kim Jong-un at some sort of summit or somewhere in May. So Trump will supposedly be meeting North Korean leadership at some point. I don't know where it will take place. I'm assuming it's going to take place in South Korea, but maybe not. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe China wants to hold it.
Damn, after that Twitter beef too.
I know, right? After, was it like my button's bigger than your button or something?
Awkward. Is it my button's bigger than yours and it actually works? I think he's that.
So, I mean, the thing here is what we're saying, though, by the way. So there's a big picture in all this, and you could almost make the argument it could be a march towards war still, right? Diplomacy is happening right now. So I will tell you, if this breaks down, there's a very high risk of war. It seems to me the effort and that's being put in diplomacy right now is directly proportionate to the potential like extremity of a military outcome, right? It's a very big push on diplomacy because the stakes are so high. So if this breaks down, I'm telling you, the war drum is going to be beaten really loud, and we need to be careful of that. I think Trump is doing the right thing here. South Korea is playing this perfectly.
They have to.
They're playing it really well. Zone. Yeah, and they have to. They're the ones that stand to lose the most in all this, right? And what's funny was, I forget the guy who talked to Trump, and they had that press conference outside of the White House where they announced that Trump will meet with North Korea. And The guy started off the whole thing. He prefaced it with, he had like a good like paragraph long thanking Trump for his leadership. I can be honest with you. The only thing Trump's doing right here is that he's letting the diplomacy happen, right? Not that he's letting it happen, but he's obviously given the charge of let's do the diplomacy thing. But I don't necessarily see some sort of like leading from the front here from him, right? I see a lot of leading from the front from South Korea because they have to.
Well, here's the funny thing too, and maybe this is being overlooked a little bit, is that, as we all know, Trump fired Rex Tillerson. And the guy that he put in place is a lot more hawkish than Tillerson was. I mean, he's what, the ex-director of the CIA or something like that?
And that's an interesting point to make there. You make a good point. You're taking someone. So the CIA is an intelligence organization where in the, international sphere, that's considered a hostile group, right? If you're doing intelligence, that's a infringement on the sovereign nations, right? Their privacy and all that type of stuff. That's considered an act of war, right? Intelligence gathering. So to take the head of the CIA, and I don't know if this is unprecedented. I think there's possibility that this has happened before, but it does say something that you're taking the head of CIA and making him your lead diplomat, because they almost diplomacy and intelligence, although they've worked hand in hand and they've taken advantage of each other, they're technically one's carrot, one's the stick. And it's interesting that that's happening that way. I'm very interested. It's kind of an interesting observation, and it's a good one to make.
And it's gone along with the theme of Trump kind of putting people that were in positions like that into power. He had all those generals and now he has, the head of the CIA. It's like, he's seems to be militarily focused, I guess, in his hires. Unless he just thinks that generals are great at organizing things and doing jobs that way. He just seemed to really surround himself with a lot of people involved in tactical,
It's Mike Pompeo, warfare, by the way.
Engagement and shit,
Yeah, it's Mike Pompeo who's taking it over. For Rex Tillerson. And another interesting tidbit about this, he's nominated the first female head of the CIA to take his place, by the way.
I did, yeah, I saw that. But that never gets talked about. I mean,
they won't talk about that.
I'm not a huge Trump fan, but he does. He hires so many women and people of color. It's like they never talk about it, but he's, racist and sexist.
I wonder if he's going to give Stormy a job.
Apparently she gave him one.
Maybe they'll shut her up for him. Right? Apparently there was another porn star that just came out. They were filed a lawsuit today trying to break an NDA.
Against him?
So, yeah, apparently.
Well, I guess that's what you do when you're a billionaire. Regular working class dudes buy $150 hookers off of Craigslist. When you're a billionaire, you just pay a porn star $30,000.
Yeah. And you're like, and I think, and say, so actually, I think, I think with this porn star, she's suing a magazine that took her story, but they were prohibited to publish it because of the NDA. So she's suing a magazine saying that they should publish it. It's a little more complex than I first thought, but nevertheless, it's another person coming out trying to say that they're trying to break some sort of NDA between Trump's lawyers and them. So, I mean, is this a surprise? I think we all knew what we were getting with Trump.
How many people, and this was actually a tweet that I saw, but it was funny. He said, I don't know how our president could be banging porn stars and I forget what, and eat KFC and I still don't like him or something like that. I thought that was pretty hilarious. He's such like the everyman. It's like, if you asked any man, if you were a billionaire, what would you do? What would you do? Like, how many guys would be like, oh, end world hunger? No, they'd be like, yo, man, I want two porn stars at the same time.
Get a private jet.
Yeah. Get a private jet, a kilo of blow, and 18 porn stars.
It's almost like that Instagram guy. What the hell is his name? He's like
Blazarian or whatever.
He's famous for shooting guns and females in lingerie and private jets, and literally he's famous for that stuff. He became Instagram famous. And
Trump is he's like a redneck at heart, I feel like. He's eating KFC. He's a little skeptical of people of color, maybe, who it's allegedly. he wants to stop the Mexicans from taking her derp.
Taking her derp.
And he's banging porn stars. Like, he could be like on like with Larry the Cable Guy and fucking Ron White. The Damn Idiots tour.
Well, Richard, we've come to...
Sorry, I made that last part a little potty humor. But
no, it's good. It's, I mean, you know, let's see who makes it to this point. Maybe Melissa will. Or she might make it.
She might. She's probably gone through withdrawal.
So you're going to have to apologize to Melissa right now.
Sorry, Melissa. It's my fault.
For all the curse words. Trump, you know, she plans Disney stuff, right? So she's like, you know, very pure, right? I mean, she's a Disney vacation planner, you know, Mickey Mouse.
I don't know. I met her now.
Yeah. Yeah, we hung out with her during the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
She's a regular chick. She's not all, you know.
We still got to get her on a podcast. We keep promising. We haven't come through with it. We have to do it at some point. Anyway, we've come to the end of episode 27 of the podcast Without a Name. Thank you for joining us.
Very sad. Very sad.
It is sad. It was good. I'm happy we got back into this podcast thing. We got off, you know, track for a couple months here. We're good. We're back. We'll be putting out some more content on a regular basis here moving forward. We'll get Anthony on as soon as possible. Find us on Facebook, you know, the podcast Without a Name. There's another one, but they don't have any likes. Don't go to them. Go to us. We're on Twitter at No Name Podcaster. We're on iTunes, SoundCloud,
Spreaker,
YouTube, Spreaker, Podcast Addict, all the different, everywhere you find podcasts, we will be. I promise you. Tweet at us, engage us on Facebook, have some fun with us. We could take a joke. We're not going to lock you up and convict you of hate speech when talking with us.
Yeah, we've never blocked anyone.
We don't block people. Even Jim Trump, we didn't block. I haven't heard from him at all.
Yeah, he just went away.
Yeah.
He's an alright dude. He's just a little, it's worked up.
Anyway, thank you for listening to our most recent podcast here. Please get on and support us. We need some engagement. Share everything. Rich, you're going to have the last word here. Hopefully you didn't forget that we do that.
Oh, God.
Think about it, man. I'll give you another 2 seconds.
Fuck. Okay.
I'll give you a couple more seconds. And Rich, with the last word.
Iteration. I think that's a word that gets misused a lot. I was going to use it in an email the other day. I looked it up real quick before I used it, and I said, man, that didn't really mean what I thought it meant. So I'm going to not do that. So look it up.
More iterations.
Because I know a lot of people use it. You know, it's a popular word.
Do not iterate.
Yeah. How many different iterations has this gone through? So that's not really 100% correct.
There you go.